Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome into the Flagship Podcast. I am Chip Brown of Horns247.com, joined by my esteemed and fearless colleague at Horns247.com, the one and only Eric Henry. Eric, full disclosure, it is Tuesday, April 9th. We are 10 practices in to Texas spring football with the orange-white game looming on April 20th. And we're in it now. We are in it. We have much to discuss because we did talk to Steve Sarkisian earlier today to get his latest breakdown of where the Longhorns are, 10 practices in to spring football. And of course, we have Texas softball to discuss because they took down the number one Oklahoma Sooners in a 2-1 series victory, their first series victory over the Boomers since 2009, and Oklahoma's first Big 12 series loss since 2011. We'll get into that. Texas baseball loses its first Big 12 series of the year to BYU. Came into that series 4-8 in the Big 12 standings. Not good, but hey, men's tennis starting to look like a national championship contender. All right, we'll get into all of it. And of course, we'll have some take it or leave it for you as well. But Eric, let's start with spring football as Texas prepares for its maiden voyage in the SEC. They are trying to build the identity of the 2024 team. Interestingly enough, Steve Sarkisian kind of opened his comments today talking about the culture and how the coaches exhausted themselves building the culture over the previous 3 years and what a priority it is to maintain that culture from the coaching staff to the players. Of course, Steve Sarkisian said it's all on him. But that kind of attention to detail is going to serve Texas well because Steve Sarkisian knows what it takes to win in the SEC and knows that there cannot be any steps back for this program in terms of its, as he likes to say, equation of culture plus talent makes Texas hard to beat. Culture can beat talent, but man, when you've got culture and talent, that's when the magic happens. Eric, your thoughts?
Chip, Steve Sarkisian used the word dangerous. He said, that's when things get dangerous, when you get culture and talent. And first, before I go any further, I decided to match my esteemed colleague at Horns 24/7, my illustrious co-host Chip Brown with the glasses. You know, I figured I would match him there. You know, just not leave you, feeling. Listen, I mean, the emphasis is on look, sir. At least I'll speak for me, Chip. You know, you're a much brighter savant than I am. But so I need the glasses in this regard. No, nevertheless, he said that's when things get dangerous, right? Is when you get that kind of
like Russell Wilson, dangerous,
dangerous, right? Yeah, let's ride. Hopefully, we're cooking a little better than Russ has cooked over the past few seasons. Nevertheless, Listen, no, I agree with Steve Sarkisian. I think some people, Chip, I don't know if you kind of feel this way as well. I think the culture thing, you know, we talked about it a lot last year, right? Because it was referenced a lot by the players, by Steve Sarkisian. I think for some fans, that can become white noise. But I understand from Sark's perspective why it's real. Because as you talked about, he fought for 3 years to get this thing right in terms of culture. And not only that, you know, we know have the legendary story, right, of, you know, former defensive line coach Bo Davis and guys are, you know, screwing off on the bus and Bo lights into him and we know all of that stuff. But to bring to more recent times, who was the guy who said, Chip, he's obsessed with winning a national title? That was Steve Sarkisian. So you better damn well believe that I want everyone. And you don't necessarily have to use the word obsessed, right? That could be a Sark thing. And maybe that'll trickle down to the team. Who knows? Maybe that'll trickle down to the coaching staff. Who knows? But I want the culture that I set in that building. Everyone is on board with the stated goal. So I understand. I just lost to Vondre Sweat, Byron Murphy, Christian Jones, Xavier Worthy. The list goes on, right? Jonathan Brooks, JT. I just lost all those guys who I spent multiple seasons molding and shaping those guys to understand the importance of what we're trying to do here. So you're darn right. I'm bringing it around again, and I'm trying to get the Isaiah Bonds of the world and the Andrew McCubas of the world, and you know the younger guys who are going to step into greater roles like Jonte Cooks and those guys, right? Jaden Blue, CJ Baxter's. Yeah, I'm trying to. We're going to do this thing all over again and reshape the culture, because it's very easy, Chip, in my mind, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. In my mind, it's easy for guys to jump on, you know, when things are good. But if you don't know what it took to build the foundation of what this team is aspiring to be in 2024, how can you truly buy into that culture, right? That's my thing. So I at the end of the day, and we're going to get into a lot of the nitty-gritty of, you know, the guys who stood out. You did a great job asking Steve Sarkisian, you know, who stood out in Saturday's scrimmage and who are some of the spots that, you know, he feels comfortable at and some of the spots you feel a little concerned about. We're going to get into that. But I don't have any issue at all with Sark hammering home the culture piece, again, especially considering what's on the line this year.
Yeah. And I thought that last year's team was different, that they were a team that when things got tough, and they did get tough, in the loss to Oklahoma, they had to answer on the road at Alabama when Bama cut it to 3 in the fourth quarter, when K-State came back from 20 down to force overtime. I mean, there were numerous times last year in that 12-2 season, that Big 12 championship season, the first college football playoff berth, where the team had to answer and they had to show that they were a tight-knit, bonded team, which we know they struggled with in the first couple of years of the Steve Sarkisian era. Closing out games, and I felt like the culture really answered over and over and over again last year, including, of course, the win at Iowa State, where they were, you know, called out by a senior offensive lineman for being, you know, all hat and no cattle, if you will, and they answered, and Steve Sarkisian sent Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy out to midfield as captains for that game to prove the point, and then they proved it on the field. So yeah, I'm with you. And I thought Steve Sarkisian had a little bit of an edge to him, and that's good, because look, he, when it's not going just right, he tells you. And I think he's been pretty transparent. So let's get to the goods. As far as the scrimmage Saturday, we reported on it at horns247.com that the defense in the team portion of the scrimmage probably prevailed, that you had good pressure on the quarterbacks from guys like David Benda and Colin Simmons and Alfred Collins, and that Anthony Hill had a strong performance. I heard Ethan Burke and Baron Sorrell were doing their thing, and that the defensive backs as a collective group were sticky in coverage, and that there was a deep ball, a touchdown pass from Arch Manning to Amari Niblack, and a nice pass from Quinn Ewers to Gunnar Helm with some nice receptions from Ryan Wingo, Jonte Cook, and Isaiah Bond in the scrimmage on Saturday. And then when they went to the red zone work at the end, that it was all the offensive line and the running backs, Jaden Blue, CJ Baxter, Trey Wisner. They scored three straight touchdowns, kind of dominated the red zone work. Steve Sarkisian alluded to that today, saying, you know, the toughest part of our practice is always going to be at the end when you're tired. And so he said, you know, he was kind of questioning, did the defense think they were done before they got to the red zone work? And did they lose some focus? So look, these scrimmages in the spring, you're scrimmaging yourselves, but I do like to listen to what Steve Sarkisian has to say, because I think he does put some thought into it. And he, you know, sprinkled some sugar on those names that I just mentioned, and really praised Jalen Gilbo in the defensive backfield, Andrew Makuba again, and Ryan Wingo getting a lot of praise for the second straight week, Eric. Ryan Wingo's name coming up as a guy not playing like a early enrollee freshman.
Chip, I want to go ahead and kind of piggyback off that point right here, and I want to make sure I give the adequate credit here. I am scrolling through an article. It is Mike Davis 063012. First off, appreciate you being a subscriber to Horns 24/7. Appreciate you leaving the comment on the notebook that I just wrote, Chip, detailing a lot of what Steve Sarkisian said. But the reason I mentioned that subscriber in particular is because he saw the quote from Steve Sarkisian, which was in the notebook, talking about Ryan Wingo, and asked a question that I think we have hinted at a little bit, Chip, in the offseason. And now that we're, what, you know, almost 2.5 weeks or so into spring ball, I think we can really – there's some meat on the bone here that we may have to just, you know, take a big bite out of. Chip, does Steve Sarkisian expand the wide receiver rotation? Is this the year? Because we know Matt Golden, Isaiah Bond, those two guys are locked, right? I feel like just by the way they've come in, assimilated, has been part of the program in spring, they're locks. Jonte Cook, we hear good things all the time, right? We heard good things last year. We know he's fighting for time. We know we got Silas Bolden, who's going to eventually arrive here in the summer. And you know, a guy like him, who's a veteran guy, doesn't have, if memory serves correct, he's only got 1 year of eligibility left, if my memory serves me correct. He's not coming here to not play, right? And now we got the five-star true freshman, Ryan Wingo, who apparently is not looking like a true freshman per Steve Sarkisian. Chip, I think we have a really interesting discussion. It's one that when I asked Sark a couple weeks ago, it's not a question that he has to have the answer for right now, right? Still got plenty of time between now and August. But I do think it's something that guys like you and I can speculate about, because if Ryan Wingo is truly making plays where he doesn't look like a true freshman and he's just knocking on that door, I think it's something we have to address, A, for this upcoming season, but B, in the immediacy with spring ball and the transfer portal. I mean, what does that look like? You want to knock on wood that, you know, a guy like Jonte Cook doesn't entertain his options, but for guys like Ryan Niblett, we've heard DeAndre Moore's having a good spring, right? You got receivers who came in addition to Ryan Wingo in this true freshman class. So that was something that I think, just twofold, Chip, we got to dive into, is A, is this the year that, you know, we see more four receiver sets? Doesn't mean you got to see them exclusively, but we see more four receiver sets. And B, what does that kind of leave for some of the other guys in that receiver rotation?
Yeah. And I think that Steve Sarkisian is going to wait and see who proves to him that they understand the nuances of the offense. He mentioned that Amari Nyblack, as talented as he is, and he had a big play in the scrimmage, that there are some nuances to the offense that are still getting worked out. I'm hearing that's kind of the same thing for some of the early enrollee freshmen. Clearly, Ryan Wingo is showing them by making mistakes at full speed, and that's a big deal. Steve Sarkisian's talked about that in the past. He's like, look, you give us 100% effort, we'll correct the mistakes, but give us the 100% effort. And that's what it sounds like Ryan Wingo is doing. I think this is all still a big audition. I think it's going to come down to fall camp, and Steve Sarkisian is going to know when he puts his head on the pillow at night leading into week one, game one, against those Colorado State Rams, who he absolutely can trust, who Quinn Ewers can trust in that wide receiver core. And it may not be decided until then, because we know Steve Sarkisian is a big, you know, he's all about the details. He hates playing first-year quarterbacks, doesn't really like playing first-year anything, because he wants guys who are going to be consistent, who know the nuances of the offense, who know exactly, you know, how to read a certain situation so that he and the quarterback are always on the same page. I think it's going to be a fun question to ask, but I think we're still a ways away from having a true idea if he's going to expand that receiver rotation beyond the three that he really relied on last year: Xavier Worthy, Adonai Mitchell, Jordan Whittington, with, you know, some reps, some snaps for Jonte Cook, only 8 receptions for 51 yards. So I think that will continue to play out. And as we look at the tight end situation, Eric, Steve Sarkisian continuing to give love to Juan Davis, the senior who's, you know, put on weight. He's done everything. He's trying to block. I'm hearing he's playing way more physical than he has, that he really wants his opportunity. Feels like Gunnar Helm, you know, proved himself last year. Juan Davis kind of in the same role as Jatavion Sanders and Amari Nyblack as a downfield threat guy. Juan Davis didn't really play with his hand on the ground in high school, but he's doing everything he can to prove himself to this coaching staff. And let's see how that plays out. We heard Spencer Shannon's name for the first time, the big 6'7" tight end who came in a year ago. And that's encouraging because Gunnar Helm is a senior and they're going to need another big bodied tight end to, you know, handle the dirty work, be the primary blocker, be the complete tight end, if you will. So I thought that was interesting. And Eric, I cannot tell you how much praise I heard for Jaden Blue coming out of the scrimmage on Saturday, that this guy is on a mission, that he's running with incredible determination. We know he's fast. We know he is a playmaker. But Jaden Blue and Trey Wisner getting a lot of praise for that scrimmage, in addition to CJ Baxter. So, you know, I've said I'm not going to be surprised if Jaden Blue ends up being the leading, you know, ball carrier for Texas in 2024. I mean, ever since Tashard Choice told me at the Sugar Bowl media day that his comp for Jaden Blue is Jahmyr Gibbs, I'm like, okay, here we go. You know, pretty hard to ignore that comp. So I think the offense is going to be fine. I think the defense is where there's still a lot of moving parts in terms of getting the front seven tied together. Is Anthony Hill going to be the middle linebacker? Is he comfortable? Is he comfortable making all the checks? That's all a work in progress. I think part of the reason they haven't assigned a defensive communications helmet yet is because they're still sorting it all out. And so I'm not sure that that'll get worked out before the end of spring. But yeah, I think the offense is going to be stout. It's the defensive side and getting that front seven, the run fits to come together. That's probably on my priority list, just based on everything that we've heard.
Yeah, Chip, as you said, still plenty of time between now and the season opener against Colorado. So I'll give a quick shout out to a buddy of mine from the old G5 days. Colorado State quarterbacks coach Matt Mumme, of course, son of legendary head coach. Hal's legendary, right? Air raid guy, Hal Mumme. So
yeah,
good shout out there. But no, I mean Chip,
it's Aldosta State.
There you go. No doubt about it. When you go to the defensive side of the ball, Chip, I mean, here's the thing that I think you hit the nail on the head, in terms of why I think this is the second, or maybe third, consecutive availability of Steve Sarkisian said he's been asked about the defensive headset, right? And hasn't been assigned yet. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, still trying to figure some things out. But here's the encouraging thing for me when you talk about that front four. For the first time that I can remember, Chip, and maybe you see it differently, but the first time that I can remember, it wasn't Alfred Collins is starting to scratch the surface. It wasn't Alfred Collins is putting some things together. It was Alfred Collins has put together I'm going to misquote Sarkisian. I thought he said splash, but he may not have said splash plays. Basically, it's the consistency along with the splash plays, right? For the first time, at least in the year that I've been on the beat, that was the conversation around Alfred Collins. Not he needs to kind of pick this up. It's no. Seemingly, he is taking the leap that we saw, whether it was Moro Ojomo and Keandre Coburn, or whether it was Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy. Seemingly, he is taking that leap. And that is one piece, Chip, just one, that when I've kind of emphasized over the past, 6, 7, 8 weeks, that you're not going to replace Sweat and Murphy, right? It's got to be a collection of all parts. Well, and again, I would love your thoughts on this. This was kind of I'll give you my best case hope, best case scenario, what was my kind of floor. My floor was, it's a sum of all parts. It's Alfred Collins has been what he's kind of been over the past 2 years. Not much more, but he's been what he's been. It's Vernon Broughton kind of fills in, is a guy. It's Tia Savea comes in and fills a role. It's you get some of those younger guys, Sadir Mitchell, Jare Bledsoe, to come in and play adequately. Not sparks, not off the charts, but they play adequately. And that's how you kind of, that's the floor. My best case scenario was one of those guys, whether it's one of the underclassmen, Aaron Bryant, Zach Swanson, Dre, Sadir Mitchell, steps up and takes a massive leap, or I guess best case scenario, it would be a Vernon Broughton or a Alfred Collins who makes that leap and they become a game-wrecking type. Seemingly, we're starting to get the hint of AC being one of those guys. So I think that gives me some encouragement to where, as you said, still tying things together. It's a work in progress. It's not ready to go out and face Colorado State tomorrow. But that's a big thing for me, Chip, is that because everything we've heard from that secondary, right? You talked about it. Jalen Gilbo seems to be back to what that 22 form was, a guy who had earned the starting spot at the Star, which allows for, as you asked Steve Sarkisian, Ajayi Barron to kind of be the star, but also fill in the different roles. Andrew Makuba's coming in and seemingly, hitting the ground running in the safety spot. We know Derek Williams is still here. Manny Muhammad was talked about highly, right? So he's improving. Terrence Brooks, et cetera. Really, that secondary's good. But if we get, in my mind, especially that interior defensive line spot, one guy to really step up and make that leap, that I think is huge. So seemingly, this is the first time we're getting that hope that AC is being that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's fair. Yeah. He said in the past, Alper Collins was the guy that would flash and, and give you, oh, okay, there it is. Oh, but then the next play, it wasn't there. And he said, we are getting that consistency level now from Alper Collins, and they're watching to see the others get that consistency, because he said, we're seeing, you know, flashes from Jahrae Bledsoe and Sadir Mitchell. And he did give praise to Aaron Bryant, who, you know, has been the most consistent of the guys coming up in the Texas farm system, if you will, because you've got the veterans, the fifth-year seniors, and Alper Collins and Vernon Broughton. You're bringing in Tia Savea, who was a big part of the big step that Arizona took as a run defense last year, and a guy who's seen as a decent run defender, not a great pass rusher or havoc creator in terms of penetrating the pocket, but a guy who can hold the point of attack and get off blocks and make tackles in the run game, which is fine. They need that. And then if Aaron Bryant can get there, and we also heard some praise for Alex January, which is encouraging, because he is a legacy. His dad played at Texas. It's important to him. It sounds like he's a sponge. He's eating up everything that he's being coached to do. And I think Steve Sarkisian and the coaching staff, Kenny Baker, they're excited about Alex January. And that is huge news, considering that they lost De'Andre Robinson. He decommitted. He signed, and then he passed out of his letter of intent, and now is at Florida after Bo Davis left as defensive line coach to go to LSU. That was a potentially scary situation, because Melvin Hills, the other defensive line prospect signed in the 2024 class, isn't on campus yet. He'll get here in June. And we know that Sadir Mitchell came into camp spring ball overweight at 372 pounds. And that was a disappointment, but they've got to get him back on track. It sounds like he is. It sounds like he's developing a relationship with Kenny Baker, that he's trying to do the right things. And so, you know, that's going to have to develop a little bit later. But Aaron Bryant is a guy who's gotten snaps and is taking, you know, advantage of this opportunity in the spring, when we knew there were going to be openings to be filled on that interior defensive line. And good for Aaron Bryant to grab this opportunity and start to make a push.
Yeah, Chip. I mean, just to kind of put a cap on it for me, as far as that interior defensive line, and, you know, you and I kind of just were speculating what we're going to talk about on today's podcast after Sark's presser. And the thing for me is, this is the time to where you got to make your coaches, Kenny Baker, PK, Steve Sarkisian, feel comfortable to say, hey, no, I don't want to go to the portal. I don't want to take a flyer on someone that we're speed dating, right? We're getting a chance to know each other for a week and a half, and say, all right, come in here and play a role. No, I want to be a guy that says, especially all of the players on this roster, right, outside of Tia Savea, who, of course, arrived during their initial signing period, but everyone else, these are guys who you've been around Steve Sarkisian and company for years, right? Why you want to pay back that investment as to why these guys believe in you, why they have you here. So in my mind, yes, I think it's really encouraging that, and Aaron Bryant, you said now it's January, and you talked about, yeah, it's another reason that it's crucial that De'Andre Robinson chose to, you know, not come to Austin, head about an hour north from Orlando to Gainesville. So you need all the guys you can get, because the fact of the matter is this: six guys are going to play. Five are going to play extended snaps, and six are going to play overall. who are going to be those guys? You feel confident with three, so you know you're going to need three more. This is the time. This is the proving ground. So, again, encouraging. We'll see how things shape up. Still a long time, 11 days or now 10 days, because of the time we're taping this, between now and the end of spring. So you still got plenty of time to put good stuff on film, good stuff on tape, good work out there on the field. If you're, you know, a Zach Swanson, a Sadir Mitchell, Jare Bledsoe. Again, I mean, Chip, we don't have to dive too much into this, but I guess ideally for me, it would be a Sadir Mitchell, Jare Bledsoe. Those would be two guys who you know are locked. So then you got five, and then you got, you know, who's filling in to be that sixth guy. But again, it's not about, you know, name recognition or who's been in the longest. Go out there and prove on the field. And seemingly, you know, some guys are answering the call, and still got about, you know, a week and a half left to see who else can kind of make that push between now and the end of spring ball.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were, look, we heard from some sources who were in the scrimmage Saturday that red zone work was so overwhelmingly one-sided in terms of the offense just running right through the middle of the defensive line that, you know, one source was like, oh God, you know, they need help. Now, again, it was late. It's a spring scrimmage. It was the end of the spring scrimmage. But listen, you know, this is the kind of stuff you've got to just kind of file away because we know there's going to be a drop off. There's going to be a drop off from Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy to whoever, you know, to Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton. Maybe it's not those guys that are dropping off, but maybe it's the depth and late in games. Does the run defense that allowed only 82.4 yards per game on the ground start to give a little bit? We'll have to see, but it's a concern. And you don't have the two-time first team All Big 12 middle linebacker who, you know, had an up and down season last year, but still knew how to make all the calls, knew how to get everybody lined up, knew how to make plays. You know, you're the spine of your defense. We talk about that. The two interior defensive linemen, your middle linebacker, your safety position, that's got to be strong all the way up through the middle. And that's a work in progress. So, and with a new defensive line coach right now, nothing to be concerned about. I mean, you're making notes, and only the coaches really know if there are guys who can't hold the point of attack and if they are going to have to go into the portal and get help there on the interior of the defensive line. Also will depend on who's available. If there's any guys in maize and blue who, you know, aren't feeling it with Jim Harbaugh now in the NFL, you're going to absolutely, I mean, my God, all of college football will come running at that point. But yeah, so I think those are, you know, some of the bigger nuggets from the scrimmage on Saturday. Let's, am I leaving anything out? No, I mean, I think he said, you know, for where they were in the scrimmage, it's about right. But again, encouraging to hear Colin Simmons' name.
Yeah,
I heard he had a sack in the scrimmage that he's definitely, I mean, Anthony Hill said he is going to be an elite football player.
Three and out, three and out, baby.
Yeah, three and done. And so
three and done. Yeah.
I mean, Anthony Hill, I'll take his endorsements. So Colin Simmons looks like he's making an impression, and we've heard a lot about Trey Moore, the UTSA grad transfer, whose work ethic and quickness and spin move, and he brings a little something different to the pass rush than what Ethan Burke and Baron Sorrell, who are really good edge setters in the run game and can get through and make big plays when it matters. We saw that against K-State and Alabama. So, yeah. All right. I think that that gets us through the good stuff. As far as where we are on spring football. All right. Eric, Texas softball. I mean, look, this is a big deal because Texas softball spent some time at number one earlier this year when Oklahoma lost to Louisiana. Texas's stay at number one was short-lived. A loss to Houston in the first game of that series. And then, you know, they lost to number three LSU at LSU. No shame in that. Mike White's going to play the toughest schedule he can. But and then they lost two of three. They lost the series at Oklahoma State. They got Lexi Kilfoiled. She shut him out twice. She's leads the nation in ERA. She is the real deal. And so you're kind of wondering, okay, they're coming off the loss to Oklahoma State. Where's their head? How are they handling things? And then they lose the opener to Oklahoma 5-2. And then the way they won game two with an unbelievable relay from freshman center fielder Caden Henry to Viviana Martinez at shortstop, who then rifles the ball to catcher Reese Atwood to get Maya Bland out at the play at the plate to, I mean, that was it. That was the final out of the game. If Bland scores, it's tied. They're going into the bottom of the seventh, but they make the play. And this is a team that has struggled a little bit defensively. Remember, OU came into this series number one in the nation in fielding, and Texas came in number 156 in fielding and has had some costly errors in losses that contributed to losses to Houston, to Oklahoma State. And for them to make that play and end the game, I think really gave them a jolt, a positive boost. And then they come out in game three with their freshman, Tegan Kavan, and she holds up. I mean, she pitches 3 1/3. She gives up one run on three hits. And then they bring in the lefty veteran, you know, Estelle Check, who was a pitcher for Texas in the World Series Championship Series against OU 2 years ago. And she delivers, you know, 3+ innings of scoreless relief, and Texas wins on Saturday 2-1 and then on Sunday 2-1. And Mike White says, Eric, hey, this environment, this excitement is why we need a new softball stadium at Texas. And you were looking into it. I, you know, that McCombs Field was built in 1998. Kind of looks like a high school stadium. It seats 1,252. And Eric, you were looking into the stadiums in the SEC. 1,252 looks like junior varsity, right?
Not going to cut it, CB. Something that I think is really interesting, and I'm going to run down a couple of statements here in a second, but I just think, Chip, and again, you are certainly more equipped to speak this than I am, so I'm definitely asking this in the form of a question before I get to the stadiums. Chip, it feels to me that the enthusiasm around Texas athletics, sure being good, and I'm sure beating OU, certainly makes a big deal, right? It makes a big difference. But just in general, there is an enthusiasm around UT athletics up and down across the board, right? Obviously, captained by football when football is great. 1,200, Chip, doesn't that feel like that should have been resolved a while ago? I just want to ask you that as someone who's been around these parts a long time.
Well, when they had Cat Osterman, arguably the greatest, college pitcher and maybe the best lefty, certainly the best lefty move pitcher. Cat once told me she had 7 pitches. Most of the elites have 5 that they have full command over. You could have argued that, you know, hey, How did Cat Osterman play? Well, they didn't score any runs for Cat. Like, Cat dragged that team to the College World Series in the early 2000s, and of course won a gold medal on the Olympic team, stared down that lefty heavy Japanese lineup to win gold, help that 2004 team win gold. So and Cat, I mean, legend. But softball didn't, it wasn't doing this.
Sure.
It was like this.
Sure.
And so the money wasn't seen as money well spent. Well, Mike White, I think, is showing us that he's got this thing on the right track. I mean, reached the Women's College World Series Championship Series 2 years ago against all odds. I mean, they were the unseeded team that just kicked down the door and broke all the furniture and got to the final against the juggernaut powerhouse Oklahoma team, of course, always in Oklahoma City for the Women's College World Series. And it was a great coaching job by Mike White, and he's building it, and he's got some really talented freshmen. I mean, Katie Stewart hits the home run, freshman Katie Stewart, first baseman, catcher, hits the home run for the 2-1 win on Sunday. Caden Henry, freshman center fielder, with that huge relay throw. I mean, it's a talented group. And he's got it in the right direction, and he's really excited about the recruiting class he's got coming in next year. So Mike White doesn't say this unless he's feeling like the program is absolutely moving in the right direction. So, your softball stadium, their training facility, the softball training facility, is newer than the stadium. It was built in 2009 and it got touched up here in 2017. So, I've been to McCombs Field. It feels like a high school stadium to me. And I think Chris Del Conte is going to have to, look at start raising some money. I know he likes to go one project at a time, and all the focus right now is on the football indoor practice facility for the next year and a half. Should be done April of 25. But yeah, Mike White, you get what you demand, Eric, not what you earn, not what you deserve. You get what you demand. So we'll see how that plays out. All right.
No, go for it, Chip.
Go ahead.
No, I just was going to say really quick. I mean, that totally answers that question. Just really quick to, provide some context here. You take a look at some of the top SEC stadiums. I mean, Florida is the SEC softball stadium that I've been to. Holds 3,900 people. Holds 2,900 people up to 3,200. Alabama, 3,900. LSU's 2,800. So definitely going to have to, as you go into the SEC, 1,200 ain't going to cut it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Oklahoma, seats 4,200. So, all right. Texas baseball. It's so tough because you just don't know where to go here. But LeBaron Johnson only lasts three innings. It's tough. You don't want to make any big sweeping conclusions at this point because baseball's baseball, and this team fights for David Pierce. You just thought that they've had some bad luck. I mean, Tanner Witt, who was expected to be one of the starters, his season could be over, and it just didn't go the way that it was expected to go. And then your third starter was, you're going to see who emerged. Well, now you're having to fill two of your starting roles. Charlie Hurley obviously has been up and down. LeBaron Johnson's been up and down. You've had some good performances out of the bullpen, but inconsistent. And so this was a surprise.
I was going to say, Chip, can't forget, you're supposed to get the big first baseman from Duke. He decides not to play baseball. So just wanted to add that in there, Chip. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, you've got, and then, some of the guys who returned last year who you expected to kind of lead the charge have struggled a little bit. So it's not good. I mean, Texas is still right there in the standings for the Big 12, but 19 and 13 overall. You know, this is a Texas program that's expected to be in, you know, the NCAA postseason every year, and you know their fans expect them in Omaha, and this is a tricky year because David Pierce took over the pitching. Let go of Woody Williams, his pitching coach. David Pierce felt like with the analytics he's getting from his support staff and combined with his having been, you know, the pitching coach for Wayne Graham at Rice when Rice was winning national championships, won the 2003 national championship, you know, that David Pierce wanted to do it his way. So, you know, Texas fans are not patient when it comes to baseball. So let's see where things go from here. Texas 7-5 in Big 12 play, and they dropped the series with BYU. It's the first Big 12 series they lose on the season. They lose games 1 and 3, 7-5. They won the middle game 2, 4-3. With Ace Whitehead, who has been a positive for Texas baseball this year, getting the win in that game 2, and Gage Baim getting the save. Those two have been, you know, bright spots for Texas baseball. All right, Eric, you ready for some take it? Quick mention of men's tennis, because, you know, I don't want people sleeping on. Been saying if this Texas tennis team gets healthy, don't pay attention to their ranking. They're the best team in the nation, and they're healthy. When they lost to TCU, they didn't have CM Woldeab in the lineup. Now they've got their full lineup. They've won 9 matches in a row. They've got the dual match with Baylor this weekend before they enter the postseason. And I'm just telling you, if Texas tennis stays healthy, they've got the number 1 and number 2 singles players in all of college tennis in Elliott Spaziri and Micah Braswell. Texas tennis, don't count them out for the national championship. Texas men's tennis. All right, Eric, you ready for some take it or leave it?
As always, CB.
All right, well then, let's do it. We'll be right back with some take it or leave it right here on the Flagship Podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
And if you're watching us on the Horns 24/7 YouTube channel, we will roll on with some take it or leave it. Eric, you are serving up number one.
Nice usage of serve coming off of Tennis Talk, CB. That's why you are a scholar and a gentleman and a pro. The first one, you are concerned that Aaron Bryant is drawing more praise amongst Texas defensive tackles than guys, two guys are a little more veteran than him, Dre Bledsoe and Sidir Mitchell. Take it or leave it, Chip Brown.
I'm gonna leave this and say that it would have been nice to hear that Aaron Bryant, Dre Bledsoe, and Sidir Mitchell are all moving with conviction into the Texas defense interior defensive line rotation. The fact that Aaron Bryant has done what he's supposed to do and is, you know, gobbling up the coaching and doing what's being asked, that's great news. Because look, you know, Dre Bledsoe and Sidir Mitchell, I think we know, we haven't seen enough of Sidir Mitchell, but everything I heard last year was that he was starting to, you know, penetrate and be disruptive. He's, Lord knows, at 6'6", I think last year he was at 335. You know, he has the potential to be disruptive. I mean, Texas beat out Georgia for his signature. But I'm going to leave this because it's early. There's still time. So I'm going to leave it, Eric. How about you?
Yeah, I'm going to leave it because, like you said, it's early. And quite frankly, someone had to draw praise. I mean, that's the way I'm looking at it. I you know, talk a lot about what kind of my thoughts were as far as best case scenario, worst case scenario, as far as the interior defensive line. I'm glad someone's drawing praise. You know, the spots are there for the taking. So if it's Aaron Bryant, hey, go get it. So I'm going to leave it, but also it's early, so we still have time.
All right, take it or leave it. Number two, Eric, you are confident Texas's secondary will be improved over last year based on what you're hearing this spring. Take it or leave it.
Chip, I'm taking this. I'm going to start. Jalen Catalon, while there were certainly times, at least in the limited viewing we had during the fall, that he looked like a game wrecker, the injury concerns were never really answered. And even in, and I think, Chip, you asked, I wish I could remember after which game or which Monday, you had asked whether Jalen Catalon was on a pitch count, and Sark said no. But even our eyes didn't deceive us that he was only playing sparingly, right? So there's one factor. I think Andrew Makuba is certainly an upgrade. I think Derek Williams is ascending as a player. Manny Muhammad, I'm really high on Gavin Holmes, Chip. He's someone who I think, while doesn't get a lot of recognition, he plays that spot really well. I think the trio of him and Terrence Brooks are really good. And Jalen Gilbo, right? We're getting him back seemingly as an impact player. So, yeah, I'm taking this one.
Yeah, I'm going to take it as well. I'm way high. I'm buying stock, as much stock as I can, in Malik Muhammad. I agree with you. I'm hearing Gavin Holmes is really making a push. We know he's fast. He's capable. He just needs to believe and then go out there and do it, play in and play out. We know Terrence Brooks is really physical, maybe too physical at times. And you know, the Warren Roberson, I mean, I wrote in the Insider a couple, week and a half ago that Warren Roberson's probably the fourth corner right now, along with Malik Muhammad, Terrence Brooks, and Gavin Holmes. Warren Roberson, don't forget about him, because he's got the speed, he's got the physicality, and he's an interesting name to keep an eye on as we move from spring into summer. So, yeah, and I think Andrew Mukuba is a coverage safety. And Jalen Catalan was a box safety. And it got to the point where it was kind of, well, we'll use Catalan in games like Alabama and where we know there's going to be a power running attack. And we'll go with Michael Taft, who's more of a coverage guy, Jaron Thompson last year. Well, Mukuba is a coverage guy, but he's also a good tackler. And that starts to solve some of the problems. And I agree with you. And Jelani McDonald, it's another name that is coming up more and more. And Jelani McDonald, if you saw him getting off the bus, you'd be like, who is that? He looks a lot like Ryan Watts, actually. And he's a guy who did it on special teams last year, 6'2", 205. His dad was a big-time linebacker for Gary Patterson at TCU. This kid knows football. He played quarterback in high school. He knows what he's, you know, looking at. So that's exciting news, too. I'm taking this. That was a long-winded answer, Eric. Taking it.
And we will bring us home on this one. You can't wait for Texas women's basketball to match up with recently crowned defending champion Dawn Staley and the South Carolina women's basketball team, the Gamecocks, next year. No matter where that game is, Chip, take it or leave it.
Yeah, I'm taking it. And I mean, Kim Mulkey's back in our lives. You know, she left Baylor and with three national championships and went out to LSU. And now here we are. Texas is heading off to the SEC to be reunited with Kim Mulkey. But Dawn Staley did a hell of a lot better coaching job against Caitlin Clark than Kim Mulkey did. Dawn Staley put her best athlete on Caitlin Clark and shut her down. Kim Mulkey kept Haley Van Lith on Caitlin Clark when she should have had Flage, you know,
Johnson
defending her. But anyway, yes, I'm taking this, Eric. How about you?
I couldn't help but laugh because, yeah, Haley Van Lith, she went straight to the transfer portal, which, again, listen, I am not reporting this as any fact. Texas could use a guard. Just saying, although we all know how Haley Van Lith had a little kerfuffle going through the line with Longhorns. Nevertheless, yeah, man, I am super hyped for this one. Chip, I would not only come out of pocket to cover this game, I would come out of pocket to watch this game as a fan. I mean, come on, given Rory Harmon's returning, you know, Madison Booker's be playing her spot.
Yeah, two McDonald's All-Americans coming in.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Chip, I would even go on. We got 4 minutes left, so we won't go over. But Chip, I'm more excited about that potential matchup than, quite frankly, any men's game that I can think of next year. I mean, I don't think it's close.
Yeah, because Vic, you can feel it in his, like, every move. He is absolutely determined to take Texas to a national championship, and he's not going to rest. Because he's been to the national championship game twice and come away a bridesmaid twice. And he is absolutely, you know, convicted that he can and will take Texas to that national championship game and win it all. And in the SEC, he's going to get all kinds of preparation for that, Eric.
No doubt about it.
All right. Listen, folks. Appreciate you. Appreciate you tuning into this episode of the Flagship Podcast. Of course, we'll be back next week to talk some more spring football. We'll be doing a little preview of the Texas spring game next week, kids. So you don't want to miss that. For Eric Henry, I'm Chip Brown. Until next time, we'll see you over at horns247.com, where hopefully all of you are annual members. If you're not, my gosh, no time to get in like the present with Texas as a favorite in the SEC top three team. Let's say Quinn Ewers, Heisman favorite with Carson Beck. Come on. We'll see you over at horns247.com. Stay safe and keep the faith.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.